Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f- So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Cool fact, a crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Also, you can get health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. United Healthcare short-term insurance plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage for you. Learn more at uh1.com.
Hi, I'm Andy Murray, and you're listening to the Tennis Podcast.
Hello and welcome to the Tennis Podcast, and welcome to Melbourne for the Australian Open series of Tennis Podcasts. My name is David Law from BBC Radio 5 Live, joined, of course, by Catherine Whittaker from Eurosport. We are brought to you in association with The Telegraph. For the first time, we are also brought to you in association with Eurosport, who have exclusive television rights in the UK. And we are guaranteed to bring you 45 weekly shows and 45 Grand Slam daily shows because of you, the people that have backed us on Kickstarter. Catherine Whittaker is here inside, actually, the BBC commentary box. We've stolen in, haven't we, Catherine? And we're sitting here foot height to Angelique Kerber, the world number one, as she's going through her paces with Yulia Gerges, her compatriot, just practicing in an empty stadium. We are hiding here. She doesn't even know we're here. We're behind a little commentary box glass, which thankfully is reinforced because the ball thuds cannons into this glass right in front of us, just a foot away from my face as I talk to you right now. And she doesn't know we're here. We know she's here. It's an empty stadium. But isn't it good to be here? Roof's closed. Raining.
It's pretty much the best commentary position in the world. I'm sure Centre Court might have something to say about that. But I think this is spectacular. I have to keep reminding myself that it is one-way glass because you could swear they're looking at you in the eye. The players, when they come back and grab their towel or, you know, whatever they're doing at the back of the court, you could swear they're making eye contact with you. But it is one-way glass. All you can hear is, you can just about hear the thuds in the background. Angelique Kerber is probably I'm not very good with distances, 10 metres away from us just at the moment, 10 metres.
Yeah, well, I'm 2 metres tall, so if I lay down five times, yeah, I think you'd be about right. Catherine, we've just had the draw. We're going to be talking about the draw. It's thrown up all sorts of permutations for the next 2 weeks. It is Friday as we come to you. They've had the draw, and we are trying to get over jet lag at the moment. Catherine Whittaker's been here for a couple of days. How are you feeling, Catherine? I got in late last night.
I feel great, actually, but I'm surprised at how good you feel.
You're surprised?
You usually get taken out quite badly with jet lag, but rumour has it you've been on the old melatonin. That is the buzzword amongst media at the moment. It seems to be the secret.
I'm quite glad I don't have to get tested for it. But anyway,
law in doping scandal.
Yeah, exactly. Thankfully, I'm not an athlete in any way, shape, or form. We must just very quickly say, Catherine, how excited we are, the fact that we're doing this at a Grand Slam because of the wonderful support that we've been shown on Kickstarter. There is still 36 hours or so left of our crowdfunding Kickstarter to go. So if you had been intending to back the show and, you know, get your name on the website as a friend of the Tennis Podcast, maybe you want one of the categories and to introduce a show or the creme de la creme of taking us on in our predictions competition for the year, Catherine. Oh, I can't believe how many people have done it. There's about 14 of us now. There's only 6 spaces left. So that's still a possibility if you want to take on Catherine Whittaker and take her apart at the predictions competition. Catherine's shaking her head. Oh, that was a thud from the ball into the glass that almost hit Simon Briggs, who we're going to be bringing in from the Telegraph in just a moment or so. But it has been heartwarming, hasn't it? I was 35,000 feet in the air when the final pledge took us over the line for Grand Slam dailies by a contributor known as Rosie G, who has actually set up her own Twitter handle as a result of that, which is Rosie, not the dog.
Yeah, she's my new favourite person. I did, when you sent me WhatsApps from the sky, as you did, excited WhatsApps from the sky saying we'd made the target. And you're right, it was a pretty overwhelming moment, or made the second target, made the, you know, the Uber target. I mean, the first was an overwhelming enough moment. I asked for some details about this Rosie G character just to verify that it wasn't a member of the Whittaker family posing as Rosie. But as far as I can tell, it is not any of my extended family. It is just a lovely listener. And we're very, very grateful to Rosie G and to everybody else.
We are.
That's contributed because, yeah, we're blown away.
We are, indeed. Let's speak to Mr. Simon Briggs from The Telegraph, who's been here a few days. And Simon, you should by now be thoroughly over jet lag. How's it going?
Completely the opposite direction to that. No thanks to the Lawn Tennis Association, who decided in their wisdom last night that they were going to announce the departure of Chief Executive Michael Downey at, I think it was 2 p.m. English time, 1 a.m. for all the tennis reporters in Melbourne, and then followed by a conference call at 1:30. And that was kind of the last straw in a week, which has left me extremely tired and emotional. I'm about to take somebody's head off. If you say anything I don't agree with, you're going to get a flamethrower, I can tell you.
Great. Catherine, I'm just going to move over here. Yeah, great to have Simon with us, of course, from The Telegraph. He has been, I've been reading all his stuff all week long, and he's been writing about, including a story about Andy Murray committing to the Aegon Championships at the Queen's Club for the rest of his career. You can't get away from him now. Not that you'd want to. BBC will be covering that until 2024. But Catherine, this draw has been done today, and I think, above all else, we'll go through various parts of it. The bit that I enjoyed the most was when Federer and Nadal came out and they weren't in people's projected final eights because their seedings are not high enough. But I just love the way they are chucked in to other top-seeded players' sections of the draw. And it's like, right, there you go, Thomas Berdych. Deal with it. Roger Federer, round three.
Well, they're in my projected top eight. Well, certainly Roger Federer is. So I don't know who these people are that are writing off Federer and Nadal, but they're wrong. I think actually one of them might be in our midst, but we'll get onto that in a minute. But yeah, well, I think actually the biggest draw of breath came with Djokovic and Verdasco, I think. I wasn't actually physically there when the names were drawn. I was watching it on a little stream, on a little screen, because it was all live streamed and all the rest of it, as they are these days. It was running late, wasn't it, because of the late arrival of Novak Djokovic. I think if you're defending champion, that's probably allowed. But yeah, there was a bit of agitation on Twitter that the whole thing was being delayed, and you knew the whole thing was going to take about 4 hours anyway. So people like Simon, who were on a deadline, weren't particularly happy. But
I was quite happy because I just decided to publish your blog at that very point and give everybody a chance to digest it. It's about Andy Murray, everybody. The behind-the-scenes look from Catherine Whittaker about what he's like to deal with off the court. So do have a go and look at that. Twitter is where you can get the link. Catherine.
Thanks for plugging my blog, Dave.
It's all right. It's the one and only thing, so enjoy it while you can.
I did a first blog as well, during which I revealed that my dad has sort of unofficially started the Simon Briggs fan club. So I don't want to make Simon, you know, uncomfortable, but
he is blushing
now. It's in print.
So how do you feel about that, Simon? You're popular in the Whittaker household, but not that popular with her.
I need encouragement. I am struggling a bit. I should actually add that, as well as being potentially angry during this podcast, I also described, well, I spoke to my news editor in London on the way into this draw this morning. I can't even talk straight, can I? And by accident, I called him darling, which wasn't actually my intention at all. It was like that moment at school when you call the teacher dad. He's quite a grizzled chap from, you know, north of England. So he either thinks I'm a lovey or I've got a concealed crush on him now, or both.
Excellent. So, darling, what do you think about the draw? No, let's, Catherine, first of all, what do you think, though? So the point you were making about the draw is that you've got Djokovic drawing Verdasco, which I have to say that gave me a pretty sharp intake of breath. We asked on Twitter a few days ago for people's nightmare draws for their player, for the player that they support the most, and virtually all the Djokovic fans were saying Verdasco. Of course, he had 5 match points against Djokovic in Doha. I mean, really typically resilient play from Djokovic to dig himself out, but Verdasco threw that away. Now, I spoke to a couple of people just now who were both saying they think Djokovic will just take him apart this time.
I have to say, I agree. I think if that Doha match hadn't have happened, I would give Verdasco a greater shout at causing the upset. I think I can't believe Verdasco won't be thinking about, with even with all his experience, be thinking about those five match points. I think it could, as great as it looks on paper and as great as it could potentially be, I have a feeling it could be a damp squid, and it could be Djokovic is really going to want to step out there and say, you think I've got a tough draw? Take a look at this. That's not a tough draw. Well, I mean, it is a tough draw, but I'm playing well enough to deal with it. I think it could be a dismantling.
What else has Djokovic got in his sections of the draw, if you to look down his part of the draw?
He's got Dimitrov.
When?
I find it very difficult to, but I think it's in
fourth round.
Looking at
your draw here, and in order for Dimitrov to get there, actually, I mean, these are players that he should beat. There's an Australian wildcard in the first round. Hold on a minute. Simon Briggs points to Richard Gasquet, though, as a third round. I mean, Gasquet can beat Dimitrov, can't he?
Yeah, I think Dimitrov and Djokovic will meet in the fourth round.
Catherine Whittaker, very, very confident. Simon Briggs, you've just been speaking to Grigor Dimitrov. I don't know whether we can give away the full detail of your interview, but generally speaking, how did you find his state of mind?
Well, he looks fit. I was actually thinking he looked like he'd lost weight in the sense of... He's pretty lean and muscular. He was in good spirits. We had a bit of a joke about his kind of ongoing popularity with the sort of gossip sheets and the lifestyle mags. And he said that they do hound me, he said, for as long as I can remember. And sometimes I wonder whether anybody else is doing anything out there or it's just me. But he was saying it, you know, in a humorous way. He wasn't really moaning. I think he's in a good place. I saw him and I saw Danny Valverde, his coach. The pair of them... They go together really well. I think Valverde is so unflappable, and they just seem to have established a mateship. He's also been hanging around a lot with his physio. No, I don't mean that. I mean his fitness trainer, who's a guy called Sebastian Durand, who took him to the arcades in Melbourne, apparently in Brisbane, and they played on the racing games and basketball in the arcades every night. So I think he's relaxed and playing well. He obviously won Brisbane, his first ATP tournament for 2.5 years.
Yeah, that was a big win for him. He played superbly well in that. We covered that a few days ago. In that section, what do you think, though? Do you think Djokovic will end up in the quarters and so on? Do you think anybody's going to derail Djokovic early on?
Not really. I mean, I do think that Verdasco, he beat Nadal here in the first round last year in a match which was a role reversal for a previous near miss against Nadal. So maybe he could draw on that. There's certain similarities this year, having had a near miss against Novak. But, I mean, I always bet on Novak to do every achievement, almost. And the way he played in Doha was certainly enough to make you think that he's back on track.
And there's that little bit we talked about, Federer and Nadal not being in the top eight. And I feel as though that in a way, will liberate them even more. I think they become more dangerous. They'll feel like underdogs, even if they aren't underdogs. Certainly Federer, I think, is going to play with that emotion, that sense. And I think there's a little bit of that about Djokovic just at the moment. He's been knocked off his perch by Andy Murray, and I think there's a little bit of the old defiance back in his eye at the moment, and I think that makes him more and more dangerous. Catherine Whittaker, the rest of his draw.
Oh, crikey. I'm the Djokovic draw correspondent. Well, yeah, Grigor Dimitrov, fourth round. I've said that's happening. And then potential quarterfinalists are Team or Goffin are probably the ones you're looking at in that quarter. Team unimpressive yesterday against Dan Evans, it had to be said.
But that's because Dan Evans was so impressive.
Yeah, I mean, he was great. He was great. But in a third set, in the second week of the season, you don't want to be being outlasted by Dan Evans, do you? I mean, you need to be having a word with yourself in the mirror, or at least having a good old chat with Günter Bresnik, your coach, if that's what's happening. Just short it out, Dominic.
Simon Briggs?
Well, I think I saw a stat that Team is 11-11 since the US Open, something like that. And I know Catherine always points out his bonkers scheduling.
I mean, he does look exhausted, yeah. And we've talked about it a lot. He's also added tournaments to his schedule in February. I don't get it, I must say.
No, but tournaments in South America in February that don't fit in at all. You know, you do have this sort of out of the way, sort of almost self-enclosed South American swing that happens, which is a very valid and interesting part of the calendar, but you tend to get sort of clay court specialist type players going down there and doing the whole swing, but players that wouldn't necessarily get into Indian Wells or Miami or both or do that whole swing, it just doesn't fit in with the top 10 players' schedule. You don't see Federer going down and playing in Acapulco and in Rio, and there's a reason for that. You know, schedule management is an enormous part of being a top player. I don't know what he's playing at.
I'd quite like to play in Acapulco. So it looks really nice there. I mean, I'm not very good at tennis, but
do you think he's a masochist? This is my theory on team, that he's a kind of tennis equivalent of that guy in the Da Vinci Code who kind of wraps a sort of studded cloth around his leg and then turns the handle to make himself in pain. He seems to almost want to go through these absurd demonstrations of his fortitude, and it's not doing him any favours.
Well, look, I am going to seek him out in a press conference this week, assuming he wins first round, and I'm going to ask him. I'm going to see if I can get enough time. I want to find out why.
I think you owe it to the tennis podcast, David.
And if it's not me, it's you.
Yeah, well, absolutely.
You need to do it.
Yeah, I mean, if he gets to that quarterfinal with Djokovic, which I have to say, I'm not sure I see that happening. I think I'd probably pick Goffin to beat him at the moment. I was impressed with Goffin and Abu Dhabi.
Yeah, actually. He did play well, didn't he? You're the roving reporter for Eurosport on site here, Catherine. You can get that story if I can't. So between us, Dominic, we're coming for you.
Yeah, I mean, yeah, I feel really fired up to get that. Somebody on Twitter posited the opinion that he's just a points tart. He just wants points any way he can. I don't think it's that. I really don't. I don't think it's a prize money thing. I don't think it's... I mean, obviously, he wants the points. Everyone wants the points. But I don't think it's that. I mean, you suggested it was that thing of... He just feels like he needs to play.
I wonder whether Gunter Bresnik was trying to make him so hard that he could just handle anything later in his career as another ball thuds into the glass window from a Yulia Gerges serve.
But it's not making him hard. Did he look hard against Dan Evans in that third set?
Not yet, but this is work in progress, isn't it, Catherine? It's like...
He was wilting under the pressure of Dan Evans. I'm not slagging off Dan Evans, but he went to the on-court interviewer after the match yesterday and he said... I'm really surprised. I thought the whole match would go like the first set went. He was
and Dan Evans lost that set 6-1.
He was surprised at how that match played out. He thought maybe he had a chance. He didn't think he'd be winning it 6-1 in the third.
He is a refreshing realist, as Dan Evans. He did picture a photo of a wooden spoon after the Hopman Cup in which he won 0 matches and Britain finished bottom. So you've got to love that. Catherine, the rest of the draw, Andy Murray, let us know. He's the top seed, the world number one. We've got Verdasco for Novak Djokovic first round. What's Andy Murray got?
Ilya Marchenko of Ukraine. I think he'll be fine.
I don't know too much about him. Do you know anything about him? I don't.
Didn't he get a set off Stan Wawrinka at the US Open in like the third round? Something, not the third round, because he played Dan Evans. He isn't he the chap that Kyrgios pulled out of a match against at the US Open?
Could be.
Anyway.
As you can tell, we've researched this thoroughly.
I'm pretty confident about that. But I think...
Send us your Marchenko facts. Last time we were getting players mixed up with prime ministers. Oh, and in fact, Simon Briggs, with just a little bit of technological genius, has pulled up his bio on the screen here. So what do we know about Ilya Marchenko, Andy Murray's opponent?
He was born in Dnipro-Zinsk or something very vaguely approximating.
Correct. That. He's 6 feet 1 inch is tall. He's ranked 93 in the world. He has been as high as 74 at the end of last year. And at the Australian Open, he has only been beyond the first round once. And in fact, his best is, as Catherine Whittaker rightly said, the US Open last year, fourth round. Catherine Whittaker, take a bow.
Yeah, and you got a set off Stan Wawrinka. Thank you. Yeah. Official Ilya Marchenko correspondent. He can go in the Victor Skugor category of obscure
Franco
players.
Skugor. Franco. You're still getting the bloke's name wrong. That's how well you know him. I mean, he did ring me up and he said, can you tell your co-presenter, just to, you know, my name's not Victor, all right?
Moving on, then it would be either Jensen Liu, the wily old Jensen Lutz.
Who beat Andy Murray at the Beijing, was it? No, the Athens Olympics. Athens, Andy Murray's about 11.
Jensen Lutz or Alex de Minaur, the young Australian. They got a big win in Brisbane, didn't he? Beat somebody in Brisbane as a wild card and then had to, or was it Sydney last week, and then had to withdraw the next round? He did. You're laughing at me, but that did happen.
Reading the draw. I'm sorry.
Yeah, I don't.
Am I?
I have no idea. Right. So, who else have we got?
I am misreading the draw.
Okay. So, Catherine Whittaker getting the draw wrong there. You got the Marchenko bit. You didn't get that bit right. So got Jensen. So it's a qualifier or Jensen Liu, and then it could be that bloke Demara, who or whatever his name is. what's his name?
People are regretting their Kickstarter pledges as we speak. No,
there's not very good lighting in here. I can barely see this.
That is totally what the issue is. No, well, I mean, essentially, the seed in that bit of the draw that Murray would theoretically meet in the third round is Sam Querrey.
Oh, no. Sam Querrey, he's that bloke who beat Novak Djokovic at Wimbledon, isn't he?
Yeah, I think he had a little bit of help, didn't he? I mean, he played well. He didn't necessarily come in looking like a guy who was going to beat the world number one that day if the world number one played like the world number one. So if Andy plays like the world number one, I'm backing Andy.
Yeah, and in fact, Andy Murray, I think, has a very good record against Sam Querrey. He tends to deal with those sort of kind of players with a big serve and a big forehand and not much else very well.
Yeah, he'll be absolutely fine. I just don't see a scenario other than sort of injury or illness where Sam Querrey can trouble Andy Murray. John Isner's then lurking in the next portion. I don't see.
Or Luca Puy.
Well, exactly. Luca Puy is the one there that could.
Who Andy Murray always beats.
Trouble anybody.
Andy Murray always beats Luca Puy easily. Yeah. Because, I don't know why. Huh?
Because he's French. Andy always beats the French.
And the Australians.
It's that much of a generalisation.
And the Australians, apparently. I mean, essentially, we're looking at. And then let's just cut to the chase, shall we? I mean, Federer. He's in Federer's quarter.
Oh, is that going to happen?
Yeah, I think it will. Simon doesn't.
What do you think, Simon? Are we going to get Federer against Murray in the quarterfinals? And if so, if not, why not?
Well, Roger further scrambles my already scrambled brains because all my predictions, which we've seen before, are pretty rubbish, tend to be based on results coming in. And Roger, he doesn't have any results coming in, does he? He hasn't played since Wimbledon, apart from the exhibitions at the Hopman Cup. So, you know, when it was revealed that he was playing a qualifier in round one and round two, I was yelling, fix! Because that does look too good to be true from the tournament's perspective. I mean,
it's not fixed, don't worry.
Don't sue me. And then in the third round, it seemed to me that Berdych was going to take him out because Berdych has been, you know, fairly busy and...
Catherine Whittaker's shaking her head. He's not going to take him out?
No.
Okay, categoric.
And then, I mean, Nishikori actually, well, he's not got the easiest of starts because he's going to play Kuznetsov, the man due to play Dan Evans tonight in Sydney.
You mean Dan Evans' next victim?
Quite right, Catherine Whittaker.
Potentially. So that's not a good start for Nishikori either. So I don't know. I just think Berdych might come through and play Andy in the quarters.
Yeah, that. Well, I don't agree. I think we're going to get Federer against Murray. I think so, and I think that could be awesome as a match because it was here, I think about 3 years ago, that Federer absolutely destroyed Murray. Okay, Murray was coming back at that point from his back surgery, and I think that was an issue, but I remember watching that. And then Federer, apart from when he ended up playing Nadal, he was fantastic that year.
Isn't this the only place where Murray's ever beaten Federer in a slam?
Yeah, it was the year before. In fact, he got to the final, didn't he? After he'd won the US Open, he got to the final against Djokovic and lost it. But he beat Federer over five sets in the semis.
It was the five-set thrashing, wasn't it? It was that random match where he was way superior to Federer but couldn't seem to get the job done. And then he was pretty narky afterwards because I think he realised he'd majorly messed up.
He'd tied himself out. Yeah. And actually, that was the one where him and Federer had a bit of a falling out on the court. I'll never forget that. I was doing the sort of roving reporting job on Five Live while the other guys were commentating. And I remember watching on the big screen as you clearly saw the two of them were having words about something. And the crowd were really... Ooh, you know, this is interesting, isn't it? They're really getting into it here. And I don't think the commentators necessarily could see that from where they were, but within the stadium you could tell that Murray and Federer were irritated by one another that night.
Can't imagine falling out with Roger Federer. How could you sleep at night?
I don't know.
That sounds awful. That sounds just awful.
It does. So what else is going on in the men's draw? Who else have you got to look out for? What's Nadal's draw like? What's Stan Wawrinka's draw like? That's a point. After nobody picked him, as I pointed out in that last podcast.
I think Wawrinka's got a good draw, which probably means he'll, you know, crash out first round. I mean, draws don't seem to be that relevant to Stan Wawrinka, do they? But he's in the seeds in his region are Kyrgios, who seems to be injured and undercooked and all over the place. Saw him sprinting down the corridor earlier, almost ran into a door. Marin Cilic, who I think will do well but won't challenge for the title. Bernard Tomic, who is being assaulted in the Australian media at the moment for his weight. He looks absolutely fine to me, but there are all sorts of weight, fat-based puns in the Australian press about him. Apparently he's lost 4 kilos in a week. He's gone on some kind of extreme diet in order to cancel out his Christmas indulgences.
I need to have a word with him about that. I could do one of those.
Songa's in there. As I say, Kyrgios, Cuevas, Troitski. They are the seeds in Wawrinka's section. So I would call that a decent draw for Stan Wawrinka. Nadal, you mentioned. He is in the third quarter with Raonic, Simon Ferrer, Bautista Agut, and his fourth round opponent would potentially be Monfils. But I have to point out that Zverev is his potential third round opponent.
How far is Nadal going to go, Catherine? Is he going to get by Zverev and all of those other ones you mentioned?
I think Zverev might beat him in the third round.
Catherine Whittaker there. What do you think, Simon?
Well, I actually like Nadal a lot more in terms of I see him as more of a force right now than Roger. So I think he's going to go to the semi. I like the Moyer appointment. I know he's an old mate and they've been working together since Rafa was knee-high to a grasshopper, but it just seemed to me to be a reconfirmation of how much he wants it.
So we're going to get Nadal Djokovic in the semis?
Yeah, I think so.
Awesome. We are. I agree with Simon Briggs. Here on the Tennis Podcast, Catherine.
I mean, I agree. I like the appointment. I sat in this exact position that we're in earlier and watched Nadal practice with Cilic, and I thought he looked great. He was being really hard on himself out of interest. He was cursing himself, shaking his head, throwing things. I thought he looked fine.
Throwing things, Nadal?
I mean, gently.
Okay, gently.
I'm not saying he'll lose to Zverev because I think, he's a spent force and he's playing rubbish. I'm saying that because I think Zverev is a future world number one and he's, you know, not for a couple of years, but he's ready to take a scalp in a Grand Slam.
Okay, before we move on to the women's draw, Simon, what about the British guys, the other ones apart from Andy Murray? How are their draws looking to you?
Yeah, they both lost in the first round last year. And
Evans and Edmund we're talking about.
Yeah, so.
And what about Bedene as well? That's the other one we've got to mention. So go through those two first.
Well, yeah, Kyle, I think, I mean, he's on to play Novak in the third round if he gets that far, but I think he's done really well in his first two rounds. Because he's coming up against Santiago Giraldo, and then it's Pablo Carreño Busta. If you're going to get a seed, didn't he play him in the French?
Not the worst draw, is it?
No, I'd say it's a great draw. Really, I think. I mean, yeah, okay, Carl could play Djokovic in round three, but we had a mini discussion of this before we started recording, and I mean, that's fine. If you're Kyle Edmund facing a big seed in round three, that's fine. What you're looking at is getting through to round three at this stage. I mean, hopefully further on in his career, he'll be looking beyond that. But yeah, I'd say it's a good draw. Dan Evans has got a winnable one.
Has he? Who's he got, Sam Briggs?
Facundo Bagnes, and he's actually right next to Aliash Bedenier, who's got Victor Estrella Burgos. He's quite a good story, isn't he? He's a Dominican Republic guy who came in very late to the top level. Well, not quite the top level, but the Grand Slam.
Isn't he about 42?
He's pretty old. I think he's the oldest first-time title winner. He won a title last year on the ATP Tour, and I think he was the oldest first-time title winner. Like, he made his breakthrough at about 32. So, and I remember it was 3 years ago at the French Open that he first qualified for a Grand Slam, and he was the first ever person from the Dominican Republic to play a main draw Grand Slam. He is a good story. It's a good story.
So that's Estrella Burgos. He's up against Aliash Bedene, the British player. And what do we think? I think all three of those British players are going to win.
Yeah, I mean, Dan Evans coming in as Sydney champion. Could win the whole tournament, couldn't he?
Let's have a look at who he might reach in the final of the Australian Open. Yeah, which section of the draw is he in?
I mean, he was sort of technically one point away from winning the US Open, wasn't he? If you look at it in a certain light.
Yes, he was, Catherine Whittaker. No, he had match point against Stan Wawrinka, who won it.
He's got Cilic second round. That'll put pay to Dan. But I mean, look, I really like what he's doing. We all really enjoy his kind of attitude and his difference and his sense of humour. So good on him.
Absolutely. Now, the women's draw is obviously headlined by the woman who is just a few feet away from us practicing inside the Rod Laver Arena at the moment, Angelique Kerber. But she has been having, at the start of this year, a pretty torrid time. I saw her matches at the start of the year in both Brisbane and then in Sydney. She lost to Daria Kasatkina in straight sets. Now, Kasatkina, I think, is the Zverev of the women's tour. I think she's going to be a star. Wonderful prospect. But that is a heavy defeat, Catherine. 7-5, 6-2, I think it was. Looking at her on court at the moment, I've seen she's got her coach, Torben Belts, there. There's been a lot of encouragement from him, sort of high-fiving. But it feels to me that we're looking at a player searching for form at the moment. It isn't there.
Yeah, and I don't think the draw will help with whatever she's got going on mentally. I think early on she could be fine, but she's in Daria Kasatkina's section. Roberta Vinci in there as well. Suarez Navarro, Zhang Shuai, they're the ones. I mean, Kasatkina is the worry in that section. Jeannie Bouchard's in there as well, though she had a hard loss to Jo Konta last night in Sydney. I'm worried for Angelique Kerber, honestly. I feel like I should keep my voice down because she might be able to hear me. It feels rude to talk about her while she's standing right there receiving serve from Yulia Gerges. I'm a bit worried for her. I spoke to the representatives of German Eurosport earlier, my lovely colleagues, and they're worried for her as well. They're hopeful.
What's the issue? Why are they worried? Just lack of form?
Lack of form, lots going on off the court, so many more commitments than there were this time last year. I mean, a whole different world, different stratosphere of commitments, as you can imagine. You know, sponsor appearances left, right and centre. I don't think there's any suggestion that she's out
she's
of
just
shape
top-edged
or,
one into the sky.
And now,
I don't speak German, but I know she's swearing right now. She's just kicked the ground.
She's doing an arsey face to rival mine. I mean, she looks fitness-wise in great shape. I don't think there's any suggestion that she's not working hard enough. I think the suggestion is perhaps mentally there is so much going on and there's so much pressure on her. I mean, she's defending a Grand Slam title. She's never done that before. I know we always say, David, that there's only so much that can be read into a practice. We always talk about, well, you particularly have a thing about people watching practices and going, oh, they're hitting the ball so well. I mean, yes, of course they are. But she's being pretty hard on her mistakes, isn't she? Body language-wise, we saw her top edge that one a minute ago. She's practicing returns against the pretty handy serve of Yulia Gerges, but still, she doesn't look like a world number one in her pomp just now.
No, and Simon, I think the difference with her, as opposed to other world number ones and other top seeds generally, is I don't feel that this is a player who can sail and cruise through a draw finding her form necessarily and just brushing people aside. I don't think she's that good. I think when she's at her very best, she's the world number one unless Serena Williams is playing her best. That is kind of how I would view it. There's a couple of players at their best. I think Muguruza is in there as well. There are better players than Angelique Kerber if they're all at their best. But she's the one who's had the consistency all of last year, hence the results she's got. Have nothing but the highest respect for her. If she's a bit off, Simon, I think she's more vulnerable than most.
Yeah, I think this is maybe not a very unkind thing to say, but she's probably the scruffiest world number one technically I've ever seen. That forehand is not one you would coach. The serve is pretty crazy too. And all credit to her for what she's done, because it's mental primarily, the way that she showed that she was tougher in the head last season than anybody else in the tour. And I've got to say, I really like her as a person, was really chuffed for her. Actually enjoy watching her, even though it's a bit of a mess. She plays quite entertaining counter-punching style. When she's playing a big hitter, it's great to watch. So got a lot of time for her, but at the same time, she's a bit of an anomaly. She doesn't really come from any recognisable place. There's nobody you compare to her way of hitting the ball. And, you know, Catherine was pointing out that there's so many people in this draw who could beat her. Actually, if she was in form, it's a fantastic draw, but because she's in such awful form, it looks like a minefield. Now, I would refer you now to the opposite quarter. So that was a top quarter. The bottom quarter, which Johanna Konta has ended up in, That's an absolute nightmare, even if you're playing at your best. I mean, Konta has got a relatively good first round against Flipkins, I'd say. Then she's got Naomi Ogasaka, who had a brilliant tournament here last year, reaching the third round and qualifying. Then she could have Wozniacki, and then she could have Chibulkova before she's even got to a potential quarterfinal against Serena Williams. Now, we've probably been watching Konta. She was magnificent yesterday in destroying Bouchard in Sydney. But, wow, that's a cumulative workload, isn't it? Unless some of those guys hit early snags, you know, draws don't matter sometimes, but draws could matter here. She's had a shocker.
And that is the point, isn't it, Catherine, that draws can fall apart. You don't necessarily end up meeting all the players you're projected to meet. Nobody enjoys trying to size up a draw and work out who's going to face who more than myself. But if that ends up coming to pass and those sort of players that Simon's mentioned do face Jo Konta, it's I can see where he's coming from. That is about as rough as it gets early on, because, I mean, Naomi Osaka alone is a player that we've raved about as somebody we think could be a top player of the future. And it just carries on and on for her, as Simon mentioned there. I mean, Wozniacki in that section, I mean, that is tough.
Yes, it's an absolute horror show. Yeah, I mean, Osaka I would put in the Zverev category of ready to make. I mean, she kind of already has had the Grand Slam breakthrough, but she almost did it the US Open, didn't she? We did our daily podcast there, and I talked about seeing her crying in the corridors afterwards. And yeah, that alone is horrible. Wozniacki, then Sibulkova, then Serena. I mean, even if, you know, one of those ends up not happening, or one or two, it's really hard to see her getting anywhere near where she got to last year. And I feel for her on that front. Maybe it'll take the pressure off. Maybe.
Same time, 1-1, she's the favourite in probably half of those, I would say. I mean, she's probably favourite against certainly Osaka. I'd put her as favourite against Wozniacki just about. If she played Sibulkova, I'd probably 50-50.
Yeah, I mean, she ought to be favourite against Wozniacki. But I don't know. I don't know where the bookies would have that one. She's certainly favourite until Wozniacki. But from that point on, it's probably 50-50 at best. I feel for her. The best that can be hoped for is that it completely takes the pressure off and she's able to surprise us all once again. She's done it plenty of times.
Tired of ads interfering with your favourite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Normally, being a little extra can be a bit much, but when it comes to healthcare, it pays to be extra. And United Healthcare makes it easy with Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they supplement your primary plan, helping you manage out-of-pocket costs without the usual requirements and restrictions like deductibles and enrollment periods. So when it comes to covering your medical bills, you can feel good about being a little extra. Visit uh1.com to find the Health Protector Guard plan for you.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Serena Williams, Simon Briggs, first of all, just nice to have her back on the circuit. We were talking about it in the previous show about how much she hated Auckland because of all its wind and difficult conditions in that respect. But she still lights up a draw, doesn't she? Because you know, well, this is arguably the greatest player of all time that we're watching right now, still trying to break all the records.
Well, yeah, and it's interesting because no form obviously has won victory since the US Open, didn't have a good time in Auckland. On the other hand, look down that top 10 and, wow, I mean, there's a lot of space available at the top of women's tennis. There's nobody, if Kerber continues to look as shaky as she is right now, there's nobody saying, this is mine, I am the one to beat. So you'd think if Serena can get some momentum up, great chance. Having said that, she has got the equivalent first round to Novak. Now, they're both number two in the world. They're both possibly underrated at number two in the world. And while Novak is playing Fidasco, Williams has Belinda Bencic, which is a tough start.
So. I mean, on paper, that's a horrendous start because Belinda Bencic is another of those players that we think has the potential to be top five in the world in years to come and a Grand Slam champion. But, Catherine, she hasn't got any sort of form. She retired a week ago because what was an awful, I think, toenail injury that ripped off. It looked horrible, the picture she posted. She has had illness and ill health for much of the last year. I mean, really, I can't see it.
Oh, I can't either. And she does. She's a great player. I love to watch her, but she doesn't have the weapons to be able to win a match when she is not fully fit or not feeling great. So I'm afraid I fear for her there. As much as on paper that looks like a mouth-watering first-round clash, I think it could be a bit of a rout, and that will be sad to see for Bencic because, it's been an awful time. Bit like, not even quite as bad as Tanasi Kokkinakis, who withdrew today. I mean,
that's such a shame, isn't it?
It's just awful. I mean, he's barring his attempted return at the Olympics, he's these crucial years of his career, and he's just not even able to pick up a racket. Yeah, terrible.
And he did well to win the Brisbane doubles, or was it a couple of weeks ago? And I mean, you know, I thought, here we go, but it's an abdominal injury. It's not a shoulder injury. Hopefully it's just a sort of the body's not used to this stuff anymore kind of injury, and he can get over it and gradually work his way back. But that's one of the problems, isn't it? Trying to come back at this level and this intensity, it's tough.
Yeah, I mean, it's not a serious injury, this one. The shoulder has obviously been a shocker. But he's got loads and loads of time, hasn't he? He's ahead of poor old Laura, who...
Of course you saw her in Laura Upson in qualifying yesterday.
Yeah, well, Laura just could not hit the ball. It was really quite upsetting, and she was very upset as well. And she had a mental block. She admitted it. She went out on court immediately before the match. She had a flashback to 2014. Flipkins, her first round when she shouldn't have played, probably in hindsight. Her tendonitis was flaring up. She had the operation 3 months later, didn't play for 18 months afterwards. So she talked about going to see a sports psychiatrist, something that she's going to do, something that she has been doing since Christmas. She's in that situation a bit like Kokkinakis, where a really lengthy layoff has left her in a bit of a mess, but he has got more time.
Why is she, my question about that? I found her post-match quotes yesterday, 2 days ago, very, very interesting, revealing that she remembered, just as she was about to walk onto the court, that the last time she had played here at Melbourne Park was the last time she had played. She didn't play for 18 months afterwards. Why was that the moment when she realised that? Why hadn't she had that conversation with her coach or a sports psychologist or something? Why was that only occurring to her at that minute? Surely that's something you've got to address before then. I mean, I found it amazing.
I must say, looking at her quotes, Simon, it did seem that she was kind of seeing a sports psychologist under duress, really. She was making herself do it. And frankly, she would rather not be doing all that rubbish. That's how it read to me.
Yeah, it's a slow evolution for her, and she said it's not going to happen overnight. And I think that's a very important thing that she has to digest, because what has actually happened with Laura is that she had a little good run in September. She won the Landisville Challenger in Florida. She qualified for the US Open. She got 90 points. That's almost half her total in a matter of weeks. She thought she was there. She thought she was on the escalator. She thought she was going back into the conversation, and suddenly it fell away again. She got ahead of herself. She almost needs to understand that she's got to be very, very patient. But, I mean, you feel for her. She was really open about her feelings yesterday. She spoke very honestly and you know, felt so much sympathy for her, because she's a good person and has been a great player and is a terrible loss at the moment. Slightly papered over in a very narrow sense of British women's tennis being held up by Johanna Konta. But, you know, we've lost her in the meantime. We've lost a real talent and a player who's a joy to watch.
And the comparison that I read, I think maybe in your piece, certainly about the sheer contrast between Konta and Robson and the way they've changed places in the last 3 or 4 years. I mean, let's not forget, Robson on this court was beating Petra Kvitova 4 years ago.
But the slams were when she came alive, weren't they? It's just been a grim tale. I mean, it's also true that Heather Watson's got a lot to prove. I really feel that she has been in a slump ever since that Serena Williams highlight on Centre Court. Did she win Auckland a year ago?
Hobart,
yeah. So that was her last sort of real highlight. She just isn't delivering and has an interesting first round against Sam Stosur, who also doesn't enjoy this tournament historically.
Yeah, that'd be an interesting first round.
And Naomi Brody's got an Aussie as well, Daria Gavrilova. A greater contrast in tennis players you could not wish
actually,
to
that'll
see.
Be a good match to watch,
wouldn't it? I think it'd be cracking. I love watching Gavrilova. Yeah, I think that'd be really good. I think, yeah, Watson and Sam Stosur, that's, yeah, a race to the bottom mentally.
Excellent. Anything else that stands out for you, Simon? We're going to get Simon Briggs' predictions for the title. Catherine and I are not going to give ours. Simon's just got his head in his hands right now because he hates this bit when we just strong-arm him into telling us exactly what's happened. But he's the Telegraph's tennis correspondent. He knows everything. That's just a fact. Catherine and I, however, we're going to just hold our fire a little bit because we're entering our predictions tournament with our fellow listeners who've bid for the opportunity to take us on Kickstarter. We're going to be pulling all the categories together over the next few hours and sending those out and making our predictions. So we've got a bit longer, Catherine. So look, we better just, I'll tell you what, let's have a chat between ourselves while Simon pours over the draw and tries to work out how he's going to get himself out of this.
Well, this is a bit off topic, but just to pick up on, not to labour the point about Angelique Kerber, but just while you're having that chat with Simon there, she was sat down at the chair with her coach and her fitness trainer. And she was cursing, and I mean, she was having a very, very intense chat with them. I mean, the body language is deteriorating by the minute, and it's not starting from a, you know, definitely all is not well, without question. Without question, she's having, yeah, tough time out there, and it's only practice.
Karolina Pliskova, I notice, is at the top half of the bottom section of the draw. She could end up playing Radvanska in the quarters, and then maybe Serena Williams in the semis. Who knows? It's all very interesting. And we've got Kerber up against Lesia Sorenko, and we mentioned Kasatkina. Kerber-Kasatkina could happen in the fourth round. Roberta Vinci's in that bit as well. And then Garbiñe Muguruza. My pick for the title, everybody. Let's not forget that, because I did come on the podcast and say that a couple of days ago, didn't I, Catherine?
You did, yeah. You did.
Gutsy me. So, Simon Briggs, we've given you enough time. Mm-hmm. So it could be Muguruza, Kerber in the quarters. And then, oh, Venus Williams is down there in the bottom section there with Simona Halep. So, Simon, what are your finals going to end up being in the men's and the women's draws?
Pliskova is going to win the title. That's my big call.
I love it when Simon Briggs is on. He just gives us these sort of really gutsy picks.
But they're always wrong, almost without exception.
Being correct is not relevant.
Pliskova will win the title, and she will play Halep in the final.
Okay, Simon Briggs. What about the men's?
Novak will win the title. I'm going to resort to a Brad Gilbertism and say that the tax man is going to collect. I think he'll... He'll beat Andy in the final again.
Yes, we've been there before, haven't we? And we've been in this room when it's happened. So, Simon Briggs, just a quick word on the story you were telling us earlier on about Michael Downey stepping down as the chief executive of the Lawn Tennis Association. Been there for 3 years. Obviously, Britain generally has had a lot of success within tennis. But what is your conclusion as to what that period has been like?
It's been a mixed bag. Participation has been the stated priority, and I think he's done a decent job there. and has shown some, you know, some understanding of marketing, and made some strides with local authorities. Performance has been a shocker, really.
And yet, you say that, and you think, well, hold on, we've got all these good players. Everybody's winning stuff. We've got Dan Evans and Kyle Edmund and Konta and Watson and Murray and all these. So, what do you mean?
Now, I'm talking about, you know, the performance-based centres which are working with the younger players who haven't made it onto the tour. There's been an interesting little unexpected outcome, because you had a lot of money under Draper that drew people in, kept them in the game, set up a lot of coaching and background. That wasn't necessarily healthy for those players in the long run. It happened to stop almost overnight with Johnny came in. The money went away, but the foundations had been laid. And actually, it was a law of unintended consequences. It's worked brilliantly. You know, somebody like Konta has been forced out of the system, has made her own way, and has gone from a platform that was established to taking off, you know, like a space rocket. And that, but there wasn't sort of a master plan. It worked out rather brilliantly. But that's not what I'm talking about in terms of there has to be a performance department that is run in a logical and orderly way. And what we got was Bob Brett, the most inappropriate appointment to head of performance you could ever imagine, followed by Peter Keane, who was kind of interesting, but only there for a year. And now I think Simon Timpson will be, you know, probably a good appointment.
So. You met him, I think, didn't you, recently?
Yeah, I did a piece with him this week in which he talked about going to visit the Moneyball man, Paul De Podesta, who turned the Oakland A's into, or is that the Oakland Athletics? Are they the same or different? I don't know. Turned them into a force in baseball and is now working at the Cleveland Browns. And that was a good headline for me. I quite enjoyed that interview. And Timpson is definitely a very likeable fella and has been extremely popular already in his early days at the LTA. He's got a lot about him.
Yeah, I certainly know Tim Henman speaks well of him. So anyway, we wish Michael Downey all the best. He's going back to be the CEO of Tennis Canada. I must say, from a personal perspective, as somebody who works at the Aegon Championships at the Queen's Club and is media director there, he has always been very supportive of that particular event. And I think certainly that has gone from strength to strength, I suppose. I would say that, really, wouldn't I, Catherine Whittaker? But it has, isn't it? Anyway, let's just move on. Catherine Whittaker, anything else you want to say?
I just have one completely random bit of any other business. It's not necessarily a comment on it, but Vasek Pospisil lost in round one qualies this week. Wimbledon quarter-finalist a couple of years ago, a year and a half ago. Round one qualies loss. Brought Mark Woodford on board. I mean, it's very early days for that relationship. I don't necessarily think it says anything about the relationship with Mark Woodford, but crikey, that's a tailspin, isn't it?
When you, Simon, go off the tour, and you've said it in the most dramatic way, illustrated by Robson, it is not necessarily going to be straightforward to come back, is it? If you have an injury, and I mean, poor old Petra Kvitova, it's horrendous, horrific what has happened to her. She's, you would hope, got the natural talent to sail through elements of it, and she's got the protected ranking. But for a lot of players, when they have a debilitating injury, it can be really tough.
Is that the case with Pospisil, or is it form?
It's mostly form, mostly. I mean, there have been niggly injuries here and there, but no, it's certainly not been a Laura Robson story with Pospisil. It's been just form.
And I like him. He serves and volleys.
I do too. I think he's great. I mean, lovely chap. Nice to watch play.
As soon as you got behind him, look what happened.
I know, it's been a disaster. It's awful to witness. And he plays, you know, he's had great success in doubles. Obviously, the partnership with Jack Sock has dissolved, which I find bit strange, because Jack Sock said he didn't want to play doubles because he wanted to focus on singles, doesn't want to be a doubles player, but now he started playing with John Isner, so that seems a bit strange. But Pospisil's teamed up with Stepanek for this year, so hopefully his prospects in doubles are good, but he doesn't want to be a specialist doubles player, with all due respect. He is a Wimbledon singles quarter-finalist, you know, it's not where he wants to be.
Final point.
I'd like to say that that does have ramifications for where we're going, where four of us in the media brigade are going after Melbourne, because we're all going to Ottawa to freeze our bits off. And that is interesting, because who is going to be the Canadian number two? Doesn't it look like there's two easy points there for the taking, which if Andy doesn't play, let's say he gets to the final here and is beaten by Novak and is really leg weary, it's all going to come down to those doubles. Actually, Pospisil and Nesta might be lethal in doubles, so Anyway, that's where we're going after him.
That's an interesting trip, isn't it? Straight from here to there. Are you looking forward to that?
Well, it's a packing challenge. That was my main objection, because it's going to be 30 degrees here and minus 30 there.
Crikey. That's Simon Briggs' next month, everybody. So any big shocks that we should look out for in the Australian Open draw to go along with your final picks, Simon? Anybody going to lose early?
Well, all I would say is if you got a chance to watch Milos Raonic against Dustin Brown, I think that might be quite fun.
Oh, yeah, I'm watching that. Catherine, anything stand out for you that we should just sort of put a marker pen highlight on?
Well, I seem to have, in a roundabout way, predicted that Kerber will lose early. So, but
not first round. Though,
not first
against
round.
Serenka.
I mean, Nadal, Zverev. I'm looking at. So are we looking at first round? Is that what?
Whatever you like. Just, you know, is there anything that sticks out that you say? Oh, I'm going to tell you what. I'm going to. Hello, everybody at Eurosport. I'm just going to take a couple of hours off because I'm going to go and watch that. Take that as a no.
I thought we weren't doing predict. I thought Simon Briggs. We were having a chat while Simon.
I'm not asking you to pick the winners, for goodness sake. I just want to know: is there anything that sticks out as exciting to look out for our listeners? Everybody hangs on Catherine Whittaker's words, for goodness sake.
All of it, David. All of it.
Just watch Australian Open on Eurosport. It's Catherine Whittaker's roundabout way of drawing attention to our partners on the Tennis Podcast this fortnight. One of them, the other one is Telegraph. Read all about what Simon Briggs has got to say. Watch Catherine Whittaker on television. We're also going to be running a competition at Tennis Podcast on Twitter for the Eurosport player. We've got three free passes for a month to watch the Eurosport player, only available on the Tennis Podcast, courtesy of a competition that we're going to run. I've just got to think up what that competition is, Catherine.
Oh, right. It's open to us. We can designate how the prize can be won.
Basically, yeah. Yeah. So get your thinking cap on. Really tough questions. I only want the very best of the best listening in and getting access to those passes.
Whole lot of fun. Prizes to be won.
Absolutely right. Now, so that's basically it, folks. Here on the Tennis Podcast, we are going to be back every day of these championships to bring you the very latest of what's been going on, what's coming up. We can't wait, and we'll speak to you soon.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.